Welcome to Design Oracles. We are here to pontificate, evangelize, and educate you on residential interior design and architecture.
I'm Amity Worrell, interior designer of Amity Worrell & Company.
And I'm Diane Kett, architect of DK Studio.
Hello, listeners. This is Amity, Design Oracles.
And Diane, we're excited today. We have a really great guest.
Callie Yinsky, who is one of the owners of the most important fabric and wallpaper showroom in Austin, Texas. Callie, would you like to say hello and introduce yourself?
Hey guys. Hi. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm so happy to be here. Yes, I'm Callie, and I am one of three owners of Supply Showroom here in Austin. We are a wallpaper and fabric showroom based here in Austin, but we have salespeople in Houston and Dallas and actually out of the state as well. We are about to turn 8 years old in September, what? If you can believe it.
I cannot. It's insane. That's a long.
I know.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm a Texas girl. I'm from Fredericksburg and I went to UT, and I moved to New York after college, and I had a career in magazines. I was an editor for Met Home, Martha Stewart, Domino, Blueprint. A lot of these have folded. Actually, most magazines have folded, or they're online, sadly. Yeah. But I moved back and I was an interior designer here in Austin and looking for cool sources and couldn't find all the cool stuff that we had in New York. So I decided, hey, why don't we bring it here and have some options for other designers who are working.
That's great. We're so grateful for that too, because I felt the same when I came here from New York in 2008 and kind of went, oh, I didn't realize how good I had it.
Yeah, I know.
So grateful for that. That's wonderful.
Well, you're welcome. I know I selfishly did it too, because I wanted, you know, it all for me. I'm like, hey, especially, you know, I love my showrooms that I worked with in New York, but when you moved to Texas back then, they were like, what, you, who, what do you want? You know, so at least this was a place where you could come and grab stuff and take it for a meeting immediately.
We're now on the map though. We are definitely on the map.
That's, yeah. Awesome.
We're the third coast.
Exactly. Coast.
Okay, great. Well, Diane is really who wrote the questions today. And I know so much about fabrics that maybe I'll have her ask a few of the beginning ones and we'll go from there. Is that okay, Diane?
Okay, yeah, sure. And I don't know as much about fabric, that's for sure. I mean, mm-hmm. I totally admire it and everything. But I mean, like, I know Amity has talked a little bit. We had a textiles podcast about how you learn so much about the weave and all of that.
Warp and the weft and the repeat.
Yeah.
The...
So I guess you learn about all that too with your background. And then do you learn even more since now you do so much fabric?
Yeah. It's really interesting. I think a lot of interior design students don't know about fabric. They don't know about finishings and how to use them. So I think one of the biggest helps that we do for all of our clients is kind of educate designers even on what you can and can't do with fabric. We have fabrics that come in many different weights. I would say the majority of the fabrics that we sell are linens. We have lightweight linens, we have heavyweight linens. And it was an education myself. Cause I mean, you think something, oh, it's pretty. I'll put it on a window shade or I'll put it on a sofa. And those are two very different fabrics, that are required for each of those, applications. So, we've kind of had to teach ourselves along the way so that we could inform our clients as well on what to do with things. And I love having students come to Supply, and we have a great relationship with Texas State and with UT's textile program, because for them, it's an eye-opening experience. Like, hey, what is this stuff? And then now with the performance fabrics and how, we are being asked for them in every, residential and commercial projects, we're really having to educate ourselves on the different finishes, the rubs, the constructions.
you talk about what performance fabric means for people who don't know? And then you mentioned rubs and double rubs and all of that. Can you just give us a quick overview?
Sure. Yeah. So performance fabric kind of has is a broad name for, I think, a lot of different fabrics that fit into that category. It can be anything that has a little bit of poly in it, where it's not 100% cotton or 100% linen, or it can be something up to an outdoor fabric, a sunbrella or a krypton that is basically indestructible. So it ranges. And now when you get into the nitty gritty, people are asking like, oh, well, is that, can we put that outside, or is it only for inside? Is it a spot treat, or is it, you can throw it in the washing machine? So performance encapsulates all of those different fabrics.
Can the fabric perform, I guess.
Yes.
Right. Under all that duress.
I know a lot of commercial or like restoration hardware uses almost exclusively performance fabrics on their pieces. And one thing I find that is helpful for clients, and you're mentioning this, is just for students of interior design and for clients to learn that it can still be plush and soft and beautiful and look amazing and wear well.
Totally. And I feel like the weight is lovely, and the way it moves is like, so it can be used in really any situation, and people wouldn't know that there was a little bit of polyester that was thrown in there to make it more durable. And we had one of our vendors, Parker and Jules, they're British, and they had talked even about their printing process and how that makes their fabric. They just take a Belgian linen, and then what they print on top of it, they use an ink that is actually a performance ink that you can wipe and you can rub and you can use little soap. So the technology is becoming better and better. So you could still have that natural fiber, but what they're printing on, you know, is science.
Well, that's amazing. I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah.
Yes. And then talk to us a little bit about, I think this is to put a point on what your discussion you brought up is teaching people how to use a certain fabric in a certain area. But there are, and this is my cue up for you, different things you can do to a fabric to make it usable in a different condition. Can you talk a little bit about that?
If you fall in love with a lighter weight linen, and linen is measured, I think it's by the millimeter. So there's like a 2 millimeter, or there's a 5, or there's a 7. If you fall in love with the weight and the feel of something that is printed on a 2, you can always use it for upholstery, but it would have to be backed. And so we work a lot with a lot of finishing companies where we just send the fabric to them and they back it with a more durable fabric for upholstery. And then, you can also have it sprayed and, with a fiber finish, a sealant that can make a normal linen fabric into a performance fabric. And I would say probably 60% of all of our linen orders go to a fabric finisher before it goes either on a curtain or on a upholstery piece, because yeah, everybody wants that durability and they want things to last.
Yeah, I think the market has gone that direction over the years. And now that we know it's possible, we want it out of all of our materials. So can you talk a little bit about just because we're talking about this education piece about fabric, the warp and weft and the seaming, and how you can order the larger widths to cover more area for curtains. I find it fascinating. Do you mind just sharing?
Yeah, no, it is. And the larger width fabrics that you would use for a curtain can sometimes be quadruple. So a normal fabric is 54 inches wide. That I would say the majority of all of our fabrics that are printed on linen, or even a lot of our upholstery fabric is just 54 inches wide. But once you get into the shears, they can create those into, I think it's 108. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or 112 inches. So they can do double width, which is incredible. I guess you were asking also about the Martindale rubs too. Well,
I was asking about why is 54, and you may not
standard.
Know.
No, I actually don't either. I don't. That's a really good question.
Well, it, My understanding is, at least in the old days when I was doing my design education, was had to do with the loom sizes.
Which would make sense. And that's probably the room sizes too. So you can't fit a big loom in a tiny little room.
Yeah, probably.
Most factories were probably small.
And the more expensive fabrics are actually short, not as wide as 54.
Exactly.
And that's why you end up with lots of seams if you want to put a really expensive fabric on a sofa. So I'm always encouraging my clients to embrace the seaming because it looks more expensive because it is.
That's fascinating. I love that. You're like, guess what? That's actually not cheaper.
No,
it's more expensive. Love it.
That seems in a less expensive fabric. So it looks more high end. So
fascinating.
But yeah, the rubs. Tell us about the rubs.
Well, on average, I would say, so Martindale is a creation of this machine that basically pounds the heck out of fabric. So on average, a Belgian linen is about 20 to 30,000 Martindale rubs. So it can be, and then the majority of our hospitality stuff can go up to like 110 or 150, which is basically indestructible. So I would say for residential use, the 20 to 30,000 is totally fine. And there should be no concern about using that on a piece of furniture that you're sitting on every single day.
I find it interesting that you almost don't, sometimes as an interior designer, don't want to share that information with clients.
Exactly.
You get wrapped around it.
And obsessed with it. Yeah. And that's the other thing I think an education of our of interior design clients is that like the loving a piece of material and seeing how it changes over time with use. Like to me, that's patina. And I love that. And like, it shows that you've lived with this thing. I don't want perfection forever. I mean, I guess it would be nice, but there are definitely people who want it to look like it was off the showroom floor or right out of your upholsterer's hands. We have to kind of educate our clients on like this patina is beautiful in the way that a fabric or a linen stretches. That just shows that it's a natural product. So
agreed. You're preaching to the choir with that one.
I know.
Sure. Okay. So tell us about some of the challenges of running your showroom, the good and the bad and the ugly.
Yeah. So right now we have about 54 different vendors from all over the world. 54 vendors means 54 different ways of running their businesses, 54 different ways of sourcing their ground material. So we have people who exclusively only buy Belgian linen. We have people who, you know, will find other Irish linens. They will find European blends. And with the, I guess our biggest challenge is the supply chain right now, which everybody's experiencing is we're really kind of finally struggling with the base cloths, that have been, backlogged, due to COVID. So I think for all of our artists, they are challenged because they get frustrated with not being able to create the product that they want and to the standards that they want. So with us, like we've had people change their base grounds like numerous times over the last 2 years. And that's a huge struggle for us because then our designer clients, they have a sample of something and we don't know what base ground that that is. So we always have to like get a CFA or a new memo sent, and it's just more time. And sometimes they haven't labeled what ground they have either. So we have to send it to them and they have to hold it up to a piece of fabric that they have in stock. It's just, you know, more time.
What is a base ground?
And a CFA, we need to talk about that. A base ground, what it's printed on.
Oh,
so
okay.
Like you're wearing a linen or denim, that would be the base ground. And then we would print or weave into then you're definitely speaking my language. CFA is my, I don't let anything go out of my office.
Not like an accountant term.
It means cutting for approval. So, so maybe you have a swatch of fabric, which is what Callie's saying, that we got from Callie, you know, 6 months ago. And now the artist who made that swatch and is printing that pattern and that design is using a different base cloth. So it takes the ink totally differently and changes the color slightly. And people are particular.
Right, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So before we might look at that and think it's beautiful and want to order it. And then if Callie didn't tell us, then we would be unhappy potentially when that piece came in, if it didn't look like what we had schemed around. And so to fix that, either Callie sends us a new memo, which is just another sample of the material that's currently being printed on, and the current die lot. It's very complicated. And then we would say, yay, we love it. Or no, we have to rescheme the whole room, Callie, but thank
you. Yeah, we hate this. Yeah, it doesn't work with us.
And then when the interior designer orders the fabric, we reserve it first so that we know that we get the die lot we want. And so that roll somewhere in a warehouse, so they take that roll and they write Amity Whirl and Company on it, and they put it somewhere, and it's saved for me, for our clients. And then they hold it only for a certain amount of time. And then I gotta pay. And after I pay, they cut a piece of it off. They cut a piece of it off, send it to me. If I approve it, then I pay and they release it and it gets you. So it's a multifaceted process. And I think that's probably what you end up educating people on.
Yeah, that as well. And, you know, the majority of our fabrics that we have are print to order. So if the base ground has not changed, it should be the same. And we really hadn't dealt a lot with CFAs until COVID, because, you know, if it's the same product that's coming through all the time, our digital printers don't require a CFA, because it should look the same. With digital printing, the colors are programmed into a computer, and it's the exact same thing every single time. With screen print, if someone's doing it, you know, manually printing on it, that's usually a CFA is required, because a human is mixing the colors and they're having to pour it in. And sometimes those colors can be off, human error. The error is different, oxidation, exactly. Numerous different excuses, but, having to do this now with all of our base ground changes and people having to print those digital files onto a new ground changes what the end product looks like. So
I guess I was showing my age, Callie, because I did not know that. I'm still with the CFAs. I insist on them, but that's probably because I didn't.
Well, but any kind of, I would say any kind of wovens, or if they have stocked fabric, if it is something like a bolt has been printed, and they're doing, I mean, different print runs of that fabric pattern, and they hold that stock in a warehouse, then you can get a CFA. But because a lot of our artists that we're working with, they're, you know, one little person in Ohio who doesn't have a lot of money. And so they do a print to order thing. And those files are in a computer and it's saved. And once they've approved that color combination, it just stays the same. So CFAs are not required.
So tell me this, we were just actually talking with a gallerist who was talking about the artists they work with. And I know you do things a little differently than, say, like Schumacher or a lot of the big showrooms. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you curate your collections, what that process looks like, and how you choose who you work with?
Yes. So this is probably my favorite part of my job. And I think that this also harkens back to my career as an editor, where you're getting to select things and interview people and see work that you like and, you know, shoot it in some ways. But, you know, finding artists is Instagram has really helped. It's the best part, where you're getting to follow a designer who's working in London or working in Hong Kong, and they're sourcing fabric from somewhere. And, you know, I can reach out to that person that they're sourcing from. And I feel like a lot of the artists that we work with, they were, you know, fine artists who are trying to monetize their art in a different way. So it can be a painter in France in the countryside. Claire Dequeux is someone that we just brought on, who she had done only paintings before and started painting on fabrics, and then she had them digitally printed. And so we're just looking all over. We try to have different styles represented in our showroom, and we don't bring on people who we feel could compete internally. And so we have traditional things, we have modern things, we have whimsical things, we have serious black and white, you know, monochromatic things. It's just fun being able to kind of curate this mix of artists who do very different things for our clients, for you.
You don't want to have competing lines where one artist that feels they're being represented by you gets overtaken by another similar artist. Is that
right? Totally. Yeah. And you know, unlike a Schumacher and a Cravat who go to these big fabric shows and they work with mills who are creating the product, we work with individual artists who create this product themselves from their art.
So the other thing I know about you that I've wanted to ask about is that you have developed your own line.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
So this was also like what originally, you know, was a goal. Like at some point we'd love to be able to design our own wallpapers. After 7 years, we were finally able to do it. When I didn't have to wear every hat at the showroom, we had a little bit of time to start working on being creative. But it took us about a year and a half of development where we're pulling together images and inspiration. And we did an artist call because if I drew the wallpaper or if Kim or Kristen did, no one would want to buy it. I know it looks good. I cannot draw. Yeah. So we had an artist call and we're working with an artist who helps, you know, bring our ideas to life. So we launched that. It's actually a Texas inspired collection in March.
Mm-hmm. Oh, how exciting.
It's so pretty. I love it. Yeah.
And we've also, what the benefit that we have too is we have a lot of data on what people like and what they want to buy. So we use that too. I mean, y'all, people love Texas.
They do. So, in Brooklyn, they love Texas.
Why? They do.
Why? It's a big deal. Texas and Brooklyn have had this spiritual connection for quite a while now.
Because all these Texans go to New York.
Exactly. I call them the Texpacts.
I like trying to just get away from it.
Yeah.
I grew up in New Jersey. No. I was like, I don't want to go to New York.
It's like, ew. Texas is very similar to New York in a lot of ways in that it's very proud of itself. Mm-hmm. Very like,
yeah, Texas,
New York. And so it becomes branded. It's branded out in the universe a little bit. And so everybody, not everybody, I'm exaggerating obviously, but wants a little piece of that, just like the Big Apple t-shirts or,
you know. It's, I guess, state and city proud.
I guess so. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So I love the blue bonnets. I love the gingham. I love the sweet. I love the whimsy. I just love what you guys do. You've been a huge blessing on the marketplace for us. So thank you for all the.
Well, we're also very thankful for people like you who choose our product over and over and over again. So we couldn't do it without y'all. That's for sure.
So what about looking at like the sustainability of fabrics? I mean, we're talking about how we're trying to make these fabrics, or people are wanting them so they're easy to clean, they last a long time, but then like what goes into making the fabric, how much energy, water, you know, all that kind of stuff, and then chemicals and plastics and all that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one caveat, that people want this durability, you know, a fabric, and unfortunately with that durability comes a lot of like plastic additives, like a polyester, a rayon, something that is not a natural fiber. So that is definitely a concern, I think, for the sustainability factor of creating a home, and the waste, you know, that goes into creating a yard of fabric. Mm-hmm. You know, 100% Belgian linen or 100% Irish linen, you know, those are definitely a natural product, and it's all natural all throughout, but it's like once those polyesters are added into something, or even, you know, the finishes, these spray on finishes, I have no information about that. And it's kind of like, I don't really want to know.
It's a good question. And responsibly, we should probably find out because I do think that overall our industry has become, in the time I've been working in it, significantly more green. It is a thing that is happening. It may happen slowly and there may be a swing this way and swing that, but we learn and we get better.
Baby steps.
Yeah. I do think it's happening. We get better. each.
I know for sure that like our wallpaper grounds and the printing process has become so much cleaner. People are not using, you know, those vinyls from 1980s and 1990 that like literally would suffocate the walls and the smell of that. And we, you know, we had these papers that when we first opened, you know, you would hang and the room would just smell so bad for days. And now all of those artists have moved away from those printers and that process.
So Callie, tell us what you find is the most challenging part of what you do. And then also what you enjoy the most.
I would say the most challenging thing is managing expectations. Mm-hmm. When you're working with, you know, 54 different people all over the world, and they have their own little company that they're working with their mill, you know, we have the end user that we are in direct communication with. And that person is the person who's buying it. And it's for you, your client too. And it's, we want them to be happy and we want things to arrive when they say they're going to be arriving. But in this world now, nothing ever goes right. So I tell my staff all the time, I was like, let's lower our expectations to zero. So nothing on this order, nothing is going to go right. So how do we then tell our client when to expect it and what they can tell to the person who's in the end paying the amount of money for this product? So that's the biggest struggle. And if you can imagine like compounding how many orders that y'all have and you're having to deal with on a day-to-day basis with all of our other designers that we're working with, there's a lot of problems. We at one point had a whiteboard with how many minutes since our last issue, and I made them take it away because there's no point. There's always an issue.
It's funny. So, I say constantly to my team, if it can go wrong, it will go wrong. And if you walk around knowing that is the forefront of your mind, then your expectations are nice and low.
Exactly.
Right. And it does go right. It does.
100%. You should be celebrating. We're like, let's celebrate anything that does go right. Mm-hmm. As many of the things that go wrong, we should be talking about things that go right as well.
I also just feel like you should just be that keeps you vigilant and keeps you kind of aware of making sure you cross your T's and dot your I's.
You're right. And little did I know, and I think any designer who goes into this industry, like the amount of critical detail in every single purchase that you make, that is, I mean, it's a complicated business for sure. It's not for the faint of heart.
There's a lot of moving parts for sure. Definitely. Yeah.
I always say, like, I was like, I wish that we had started a company that was selling red socks and blue socks. You can buy either red or blue and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then you can do fabric on walls and mm-hmm. ceilings. Do you have fabric, do you sell fabric for that kind of deal? I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we moved showrooms, I guess it was a year and a half ago now. It was 2020. And we had always wanted to use fabric in that way. So we did the ceiling. We tinted it in fabric. We used 135 yards of fabric, which is insane. But you'd ask about like the types of fabrics.
Yeah.
There is a type of fabric called a voile that is a super, super light, the lightest before you get to a sheer. And it's able to gather beautifully. It's the air we actually from the vents can blow through it because it's so fine as well. So there are different fabric types that you can use for that. And then for upholstering a wall, I think actually it's sometimes better to use something heavy to give it more texture too.
You just have to apply it to a panel and then use that on the wall. I mean, you don't have to, but if you have a heavyweight fabric, mm-hmm. if you wrap it on a panel, then put a little cushion and attach it to the wall. That way you can drill through the plywood. Anyway.
Cool. Yeah. And then it's like nice and cozy. Could you imagine like your office being done like that or a master bedroom?
Well, we're sitting in a sound studio that the walls are basically upholstered here.
Exactly.
We need to tint the ceiling in here.
No kidding. I love, I do think everyone listening should immediately follow Supply on Instagram and go to their website and look at that incredible tinted ceiling because it's beautiful.
Yeah. I think it's the opening shot on our website. Hopefully it still is.
They must have gotten a good deal on that fabric.
Yeah, we sure did.
Every ceiling in my life if I could with 100 and some yards of fabric.
Crazy. Well, and it was so amazing because so we work with an upholsterer who's actually from New Jersey, who moved to Texas as well. Mm-hmm. And he brought his seamstress in with her machine. They sat in that room and they just cranked it out. And then they had another guy who was up on four different ladders. It was amazing watching him work. I mean, because that's artistry as well.
Totally. Yes, absolutely. So Callie, we only have a couple more minutes left, but I want to make sure that you get to talk about anything you think is interesting or you want to make sure we share or that we didn't get to cover.
So we have our next collection is coming out soon. For our supply that will be happening at the end of summer, which we're super excited about. And what other fun things are happening with us? It has felt like since the pandemic is coming close to an end, let's fingers and toes crossed. A lot of our vendors have been very inspired. And during the time of the pandemic, we're like very creative. So we have amazing new things coming out as well. So I feel like this summer we've just been off of calls with people being like, and I have so many new things to show you. Oh. And the other thing that I'm excited about is I think that we're in this period of maximalism, that people are really loving saturated color and pattern. Definitely. And knock on wood. I mean, I feel like we're at the right place at the right time with the people that we are carrying because there's joy in decorating again.
Decorating is not a bad word anymore.
Exactly.
Decorate. I love
it. Maximalism. Yeah. Add more and more and more.
Bellish.
I had a quick question. How'd you come up with the name Supply for you?
That's a good question. So I really like naming things. I don't know why, but you know, I was just like, what are we going to be doing here? We're selling fabric. Okay. We're selling wallpaper. We're giving something. So it was like, we're supplying people with stuff and so I was like, what about just supply? And they're like, wow. Okay. Yeah, let's do it. Not that exciting of a story, but
I like
it's very literal.
I like it. Yeah.
It's great.
Although when people are Googling us, you know, like a plumbing supply will show up or, you know, warehouse supply.
That's for 10 years from now when you rebrand. Well, thank you so much. Yeah,
thank you. This is great.
We appreciate it. What a treat. I hope I, taught some things or said some things that were interesting for sure.
You did a fabulous job. And Diane and I are always saying, we love to talk about what we do. I can tell that you love to talk about what you do.
I do.
Luckily, people like to listen to what we do. So even if we feel like it's every day we're talking about these things, we still find them interesting. It's nice to know that other people tune in to find that interesting as well. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Well, and if people want to check out, you know, our website, we have all of our cool products on there and there's a lot to look at.
Great. Well, if you have a party for your next end of summer, make sure I'm on the list.
We will invite you. You'll be there. We'll have some cold topos for sure.
Thanks, Cal.
Thank you. Thanks. Y'all have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Design Oracles with Amity Whirl, owner of Amity Whirl and Company, and Diane Kett, owner of DK Studio.